So I appreciate all of you getting on. I will start by just acknowledging that I am an energy voter. That probably doesn't surprise very many of you, but I vote obviously for ethanol. But I'm not alone. A survey that was done by the American Council on Renewable Energy and released early this week, polling some of the battleground states, showed that energy was indeed on the minds of some voters going to the polls on Tuesday in some of the battleground states. And for example, in Ohio, 69% of those were thinking about clean energy and wanting clean energy at the forefront of any discussion about energy. And Iowa, even more so, 75%. So clearly, energy was on the minds of some voters as they went to the polls on Tuesday. And certainly I, as an energy voter and as an ethanol advocate, woke up Wednesday morning and I was pretty darn happy. Now, look, we were in the enviable position of having both candidates supporting ethanol generally and the RFS specifically. But you look at this administration, and quite frankly, they've been very good for ethanol. President Obama has long understood the benefits that ethanol can provide in terms of energy security, economic development, and the environment. This administration has been terrific on the RFS. This administration brought us E15 and has defended that rule. The administration generally, and quite frankly, Secretary of Agriculture specifically, Tom Vilsack, have been terrific on the food and fuel canard. And I think yesterday you saw the president talking about his agenda for the next 4 years, and he talked about energy independence as being key to that. That's right where we are. And so we're very pleased with the way that Tuesday turned out. I think you flip the coin, and conversely, you got to say that some of our friends in the oil patch maybe didn't have quite as good a day, and are probably wondering why they spent so much money to elect folks that would be thinking only about petroleum interests. And I think Wednesday morning they were probably a little bit shaken and wondering, as they should be, to what extent they were going to be able to protect their tax incentives. And I think clearly oil tax incentives and subsidies for petroleum are going to be on the table now in any discussion about revenue. And I think anything that is helping to level the playing field with respect to biofuels is going to be helpful. So, you know, I think we had a pretty good day, and I'm thinking they probably really didn't. You look further down the ballot beyond the presidential race, and certainly our champions were winning on Tuesday. You look at some of the specific races where candidates had not expressed any support at all for the RFS. In Indiana, for example, you've got Joe Donnelly is much more favorable to biofuels generally and the RFS specifically than Mr. Murdoch. I think John Tester's been a supporter of ethanol and the RFS in the past, where Mr. Reberg was not as enthusiastic, certainly. So I think as you look at some of those Senate races and House races, I think we still feel pretty darn good. So it was a good day for biofuels, for energy voters on Tuesday. I know a lot of you are probably thinking about what's going on with the RFS waiver, the deadline for EPA action. If it's 90 days from when it was filed, would be coming up this Sunday, so Monday. Quite frankly, we don't expect a decision then, and if passed as prologue in 2008, it took them a while longer than 90 days to issue a decision, and we think that is likely to occur again. Whether it happens as yet this month, which is what I think most people expect, or sometime before the end of the year, whenever it occurs, though, we remain confident that the administration will have to deny this waiver request. The conditions for a waiver simply do not exist. You look at the record that EPA has before it, and a standard for a waiver that they had established in 2008, and which is consistent with the statute, you've got a, it fails all of the tests that EPA has established. The very first one, is the RFS the cause of any economic harm? Well, the answer to that is no. And in fact, even the petitioners themselves acknowledged that in their petitions to the agency when they said, you know, the drought has caused this. Well, of course it has. It's not the RFS. It was Mother Nature. It was the drought that has caused prices to increase in the ag sector. And believe me, we are certainly paying the price for that ourselves. In our industry, it's a tough marketplace out there. There's some that think that the first 5 billion bushels of corn are just delivered to our plants with a thank you note. That's not really the way it works. We're in that marketplace. We're buying corn at the market price, and it has certainly caused a great deal of difficulty in our industry. The second test, though, that EPA has to look at is whether or not the remedy, granting the waiver, will actually provide relief. And the record that EPA has before it certainly concludes that you can waive this program, but it only have a 3 or 4 cent impact on a bushel of corn. Well, that's not the relief that the poultry industry is, and the livestock industry is looking for. Heck, a sneeze on the floor of the Chicago Board of Trade can cause a movement in the corn market as much as 3 or 4 cents. So it wouldn't have the relief that it would need to have. Beyond that, EPA ultimately is going to have to look at not just what is the impact to Tyson's and to Frank Perdue, they're going to have to look at what is the impact on consumers and what are the benefits of the RFS. And on that, the agency will have to conclude that consumers benefit significantly from the RFS in terms of reduced gasoline costs, reduced energy costs, and ultimately what is driving food prices. It's not the minor impact of commodity prices when farmers are only getting 16 cents out of every dollar spent on food. It is the price of energy. It is shipping. It is marketing. It's packaging. It's all the costs associated with skyrocketing petroleum. So as the agency evaluates not just the cost, but the benefits of this program, we continue to believe strongly that they will have to deny the waiver request whenever that decision comes down. As we look out over the next several weeks, I think we, like much of the rest of the country, is thinking that a status quo election like we just had probably suggests that at least there's the opportunity for a more productive lame duck session. There are clearly a lot of very important issues that should be addressed before the end of the year, and we think that that is still a pretty strong possibility. I think the signals that are being sent from leadership of both parties suggest that they really do want to at least start to talk about some of these things. And as that conversation occurs, we are certainly hopeful that the extenders package that the Senate has passed is one of the things that is finalized before the end of the year. We think it's important that the cellulosic tax credits, for example, both the producer credit and the depreciation allowance, are extended beyond the year. We hope that the alternative fuel vehicle refueling credit is extended as well. And the other biofuels credits, whether it's the biodiesel credit or renewable diesel, these things are going to be important for investments to continue in this critical sector. And we are certainly hopeful that as the Congress contemplates how to address the fiscal cliff and their discussions about revenue, that the extenders package is a part of that and we can move this agenda forward. Looking to the new Congress in 2013, you know, it's going to be all about the RFS, I suspect. There is a highly motivated and well-financed campaign that is looking to undermine the RFS, repeal it, or change it in some meaningful way. We don't believe that that is in the nation's interest, and we are going to be working awfully hard to make sure that that program continues unchanged. Look, it has been a tremendous success, and we will be reminding people that in 2005, when the RFS was first passed, we were 60% dependent on imported energy for our liquid transportation fuels. Today, as a result of the growth in energy, as a consequence of the renewable fuels policy, we're only 45% dependent, and we will continue to make progress if the RFS is allowed to continue in place and the evolution of the biofuels industry is allowed to continue. We realize that the battle ahead is probably more than the RFA itself can carry forward. So we've joined in a coalition that many of you are aware of, Fuel America, that brings in all of the biofuels groups, many of the companies that recognize the importance of growing the renewable fuels industry, in a broad-based coalition to inform Congress, to inform consumers of the importance of maintaining this important program. We know that the livestock industry and big oil is going to be up on Capitol Hill trying to undermine this program, and we are going to be up there as well and making sure that there is at least a fair fight and that members of Congress have all the facts in front of them, because we think that the renewable fuels standard is just too important to our nation's economic, energy, and environmental security to let those that want to return to $2 corn, or those that want us to return to a exclusively petroleum-driven economy, do not succeed in undermining this program. So that's a brief overview of where we are, and I'd be glad to entertain questions. And Lori, if you can open the lines up for questions now, that'd be terrific. Lori? Operator?
Yes, if you would like to ask a question, press star and the number one on your telephone keypad. Your first question comes from Rachel Gantz.
Yes, hi. Thank you for holding this call. Wanted to find out, if Congress doesn't pass the tax extenders package during the lame duck, what effect would that have on the biofuels industry and specifically the second gen industry?
Well, and I think it would be a setback for those that are looking to finance second-gen facilities. We're really at a crossroads. You have cellulosic ethanol facilities being constructed today, commercial scale facilities that have steel in the ground that are looking to get up and running. You've got any number of projects that are in the development stage, and they're looking for financing. You need to have consistent government policy. And if they were to allow the tax incentive to lapse, that just sends a horrible signal to the marketplace. So, I mean, we're going to be working hard to make sure they understand the risk involved, to make sure that they appreciate the necessity for consistent government policy, and that the incentives that are out there remain in place.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from Dan Looker.
Dan?
Could you elaborate a bit on when you expect to see a tax in Congress on the renewable fuel standard? Now, certainly there's legislation has already been introduced to eliminate it or modify it, but by Representative Goodlatte and others, I think. But can you elaborate a bit on what you expect?
Well, sure. I mean, there have, as you note, bills that have already been introduced. Now, they will end with this Congress, and Mr. Goodlatte or others would have to reintroduce their legislation, but we certainly expect that they will. This fight is not going to go away. but just introducing a bill, we expect in the spring to be looking at hearings on this as people begin to evaluate legislation that certainly will be reintroduced when any kind of vehicle might develop, whether it's energy legislation or something else in which something like this might be germane. I can't really say. Depend a lot on what the congressional agenda looks like as they formulate it next year. But we're expecting hearings, we're expecting attacks, and we are ready for all of that. So I don't know if I've answered your question, Dan, but I think it comes next spring, early summer.
Okay, that's fine. Thank you very much.
Your next question comes from Megan Gordon.
Hello. Just to follow up real quickly on that last question, is there a specific bill that you think has the best shot of getting a hearing that you're looking at right now?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I suppose Mr. Goodlatte, the problem is he's on the Ag Committee, not the Energy and Commerce Committee, and anything on this would have to move through the Energy and Commerce Committee. But we'll see. What happens? There are certainly others to just repeal it altogether. There may be, other bills that will develop as well. But we'd be looking at the Energy and Commerce Committee, and when they get together in January and plot out their agenda, we'll all be a lot smarter.
Okay. Can I just ask a broader question?
Sure.
Outside of Washington, just wanted to get your take on what does next year look like for producers. Obviously, a ton of production has gone offline in the past couple months, just given all the rough conditions for those producers. Do you see that getting any better next year?
Well, look, it's going to be a pretty tough year. The economics right now are pretty challenging, but the demand for ethanol remains very strong. And what you have today is producers looking to squeeze every drop of profitability out of the kernel, every drop of profitability out of their asset at the ethanol plant. So they are looking at new technologies that make them more efficient. They're looking at new value-added market opportunities. And, when we come through this, and we will come through it, we're going to be a more efficient, stronger industry. And that's what happens when you have to go through these type of situations. It's getting through it that's always the challenge. You might very well see some additional facilities slowing production or having to shut down. But I think, we're pretty darn near the bottom now, as far as I can tell.
Thanks.
Again, if you'd like to ask a question, press star to number one on your telephone keypad. Your next question comes from Ryan Tracy.
Hi, Mr. Dezine. Thanks for doing this today. I wanted to ask about cellulosic and the tax credit. Keyore, you probably saw their news yesterday about their Mississippi plant. And during their earnings call yesterday, they were asked about the cellulosic tax credit and kind of their CEO sort of said, well, it'd be nice to have it, but we don't really, we're not planning for it. We think we'll be fine without it. And I would guess that's the case for other folks too, that this isn't sort of they're more worried about the waiver maybe and could get by without it. I mean, what is your take on that? Does the industry really need that tax credit to be extended? How essential is it?
Well, I was traveling yesterday, so I actually didn't see the Keyore statement or hear the earnings call. I can tell you that the cellulose companies that I talk with believe that is a critical factor for their investors, and they expect that policy will remain in place. So we think it's a top-tier agenda item.
Thanks.
At this time, there are no further questions. You actually do have a question from Andrew Childers.
Hi, Bob. I wanted to follow up on the RFS waiver request. You said you expect them to be delayed. Do you anticipate EPA will just coordinate that with the 2013 renewable fuel volumes, and if you heard them making any progress on getting that proposal out the door anytime soon?
I mean, EPA hasn't indicated to me that that is what their plan is. It wouldn't surprise me, though, if that's what they ended up doing. Certainly, the 2013 RVO rule has to be out by November 30th. They've not issued a proposal yet, so presumably the agency is thinking about something on a direct final, which I wouldn't think would be a challenge because it shouldn't be, any real controversy associated with just the RVO, but it would seem that that would be the right time for them to do it.
We have a follow-up question from Ryan Tracy.
Hey, thanks. Just take the opportunity to ask one more. On the timing of the waiver, is this something that would go to OMB and get posted online like a EPA rulemaking? And if not, what if any, indication might we have before? What are you watching for that this might be coming?
Well, I mean, every regulation goes through OMB for interagency review, and this would certainly be one.
Okay.
I don't know exactly whether or not they all have to be posted, but I would suspect that it would be. But, I mean, I think we'll probably be hearing from the agency, as soon as it's heading out the door.
Have you guys been, I know sometimes when the rules go to OMB, they ask the industry to come in and discuss it. Has that happened?
It has not.
Okay.
Your next question comes from Dan Morgan.
Hey, Bob. Two-part question. One is, where do you stand? Where does the lawsuit against the RFS stand? And the second is, one of the ideas that's been kicked around is a possible new, as opposed to getting rid of the RFS or changing the RFS, a new alternative fuel standard that would provide support for, say, coal to liquids or gas, natural gas to liquids alongside the RFS. I wonder if you could address those two issues.
Sure. Certainly, an alternative fuel standard as something alongside the RFS would be something that we certainly wouldn't oppose and we might actually support. If the alternative fuel standard was in lieu of the RFS, we'd have a different issue. There had been talk about an alternative fuel standard as early as 2005. In the Senate Energy Committee, they were thinking about doing an alternative fuel standard as opposed to an RFS, and ultimately determined no, that they really did want to promote and send a signal to the marketplace that a renewable standard, renewable energy, was something that they wanted to encourage. And so, this issue has sort of already been litigated, at least by the United States Senate. But certainly, over time, a lot more people have focused on the potential for other alternative fuels. And I think if folks want to create an additional program to promote those as well, that's certainly something that makes sense. In terms of the RFS lawsuits, I think I'd have to ask Dan which one. There are three of them. They've challenged, API has challenged what EPA has done on the cellulosic numbers, and those are still being heard. There's one that the court has already decided the petitioners lack standing, and we're waiting to see if that's appealed. But Dan, if you want to give me a call after this, I can walk through the three specific cases for you in a little bit more detail.
Thanks. Thank you.
Again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star and the number 1 on your telephone keypad.
While we wait for another question, Ryan, let me clarify or correct what I said about OMB. The decision does not necessarily need to go through OMB on a waiver, and indeed in 2008 it did not. So I apologize if I misspoke.
At this time, we have no questions.
All right. Well, again, I want to thank everybody for getting on the call. And if you have any follow-ups, always feel free to give us a ring. Thank you all very much. Lori, thank you.